south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, before we get to talking about solutions to that email we had on the last show regarding our blind listener who originally was born in Puerto Rico, went to the States, got an excellent education, moved down to Latin America, traveled to various Latin countries, encountered all sorts of obstacles, etc., etc. We'll get to that in a little while. But first, you have to know I get lots of emails, and quite a few of them address the subject of Guatemala and say, Johnny, why do you recommend Guatemala for a lot of people who are working on that plan B? How could you do that? It's one of those countries that gets such bad press. Give us a couple of reasons. What do you know about it that we don't? What's it got to offer over the other Latin countries? Besides the usual suspects, it's off the gringo tourist trail, and it's got that beautiful altiplano, nearly perfect spring weather all year round. Now, I know those aren't really enough reasons to get me to want to move to Guatemala. That's what a lot of people say in their emails. The reality is it's just no one's obvious choice. People say, Johnny, are you cracking up? What are you going on about? Well, let me read you this little email from a longtime listener who actually did make the move down to Guatemala. You got to hear this. Oh, and for a little background, he's not Mr. Moneybags. He's a middle-class American guy, wanted to live kind of on the cheap, but nothing like a backpacker. Anyway, get this. He says, hey, Johnny, I recently came back to Florida after spending an entire year in Guatemala. I came back to the States to decide if I want to spend half a year in Florida and the other half in Guatemala. Well, after being here in Florida for 4 months, I can solidly say I'm leaving good old US of A once and for all. In 8 months, when my lease is up, I'm out of here. It all started about an hour and a half after I landed in Tampa. I had to rent a car, drive across to the East Coast to see my mother, and as I'm driving, I started to feel what I can only describe as sensations of a police state. I remember how messed up a driver feels when they see the cops on the road, especially when one's right behind you. It's a feeling I totally forgot about while I was in Guatemala. But man, here in Florida, it came back in a hurry. I didn't realize till I came back that everyone really hates each other here. Seems that way. Just get into a routine discussion with someone here in the States and they'll get violent or at least perturbed if you believe in something other than what they believe in. Try to stand up for, let's say, your freedoms. The other side will just shout you down. And those feelings and attitudes extend to other areas as well. For example, if someone has an accident like falling off a bicycle, people will take out their cell phones and start recording you. And some will even laugh. And the whole thing will be on Facebook and Instagram in a New York minute. However, in Guatemala, I was in the lake region in Panachel for only a few weeks when I watched a woman riding a bicycle with a child and she fell down right in the middle of the street. And everyone, I mean everyone in the area, ran over to help. Strangers helping the woman to the curb. Another picked up the child, carried her to her mother, and another picked up the bike and brought it over as well. All the traffic stopped, too. While this was happening, no one honked their horns. No one got angry that their valuable time was being disturbed. No one took pictures to post on Facebook or Instagram. Everyone just got into the act and wanted to help. Can't say that would ever happen here in the States. It's so sad. Then, here in the States, I had to go to Walmart to pick up a bicycle pump, some super glue, and some razor blades. I chose the self-checkout lane. I was scanning those items and suddenly a beep went off and the screen said that I needed authorization to buy one of those particular items. Can you guess which one? Remember, it was a bicycle pump, super glue, and razor blades. Most people would say, for sure, razor blades. They're deadly, right? Who knows? I might go into their bathroom or the parking lot and slit my wrists. Then sue them for selling me lethal weapons and put it on Facebook and Instagram, of course. Nope, it was the glue. I know this seems hard to believe, but I actually needed authorization to buy glue in the freest country in the world. Free my ass. To top it off, I moved to Inglewood Beach, Florida, where The summer was completely ruined due to the so-called, quote, red tide, which they say is caused by fertilizer runoff from homes and farms. Yet the disaster was compounded, not fixed, by the Army Corps of Engineers who rushed in to save us. Their solution, releasing nutrient and algae-filled water out of Lake Okeechobee so that the sugar farms south of the lake wouldn't flood. But guess what? That water mixed with that toxic red tide made a perfect storm, a kind of a poisonous stew that has killed hundreds of sea turtles, manatees, dolphins, even whale sharks. Not to mention there are millions of fish that have died and are washed up on shore. Just yesterday, I couldn't leave my condo because the wind was blowing on shore and the stench of the rotting fish was so heavy in the air I couldn't take it. What really bothers me now about that whole thing is that the Army Corps of Engineers says it's their job to keep, quote, private property from flooding out. But they're not responsible for the quality of the water, obviously. They say that's this state's job, not ours. Of course, that's the predictable answer. Passing the buck. No accountability anywhere. Man, I hate this place and can't wait to get back to Guatemala. Which leads me to a residency question, Johnny. I got my permanent residency status in Guatemala completed before I came back to Florida. I also got my Guatemalan sticker pasted in my passport. It was dated May 2nd, 2018. However, my lease ends here in Florida April 30th. Would it be okay if I came back to Guatemala on the 30th? Will I still be compliant or should I come back early? I remember they said I can stay 1 year out of the country, but I have to get a stamp at least one day a year. But I just want to make sure I don't mess that residency thing up. What do you think, Johnny? And he signs it from wannabe expat Dave to gonna-be expat Dave to just, quote, expat Dave. All right, Dave, the first part of your email, totally self-explanatory, huh? Second part, about the residency, man, you have to make sure you get that stamp at least one day a year and no longer than 365 days between stamps. But we're talking about Latin America here, so I'm sure there's some wiggle room, but I wouldn't press it. I'd say you should fire off that question to your lawyer. That is, if you plan on cutting it close. Because, like I said, this is Latin America, and lots of times one governmental agency knows nothing of what the other is doing. Doesn't sound good, right? Well, to me, I kind of like it. Shows just how far away Latin governments are from having a big brother state. When their own government agencies aren't even on the same page, to me, that's a good thing. Need a good example? Here's one. I know of an expat who's got that sticker in his passport that says he's a permanent resident as of such and such a date, and he's got a stamp on it. He showed it to me. I thought he was just proud of it or bragging or something. Then he pulled out his DPI card, the little plastic credit card looking thing that you keep with you pretty much at all times. For example, if you're going into the bank, that'll be the ID they ask for when you're trying to make a transaction. Then in the rare case, if you have a run-in with the cops, you pull that out and show it to them. You'll need it if you're getting a utility hookup or you're going to rent a place. So in effect, it'd be a gringo residence Latin equivalent of a social security card. But with this guy, there was something really wrong. Turns out the dates of issue for this guy's official residency card and the official sticker in his passport didn't match. They were off by 10 days. And of course, to maintain his permanent residency, he has to return to Guatemala at least one day a year too. But what about that 10-day discrepancy in his official paperwork? Well, I'd say don't push it. Don't wait to the very end as your 365 days roll up. The thing is, if you wait till the last minute, and even though you're 100% in the right, some lard-ass bureaucrat at the airport or in immigration could give you a hard time and screw up your whole day or even your whole trip. I mean, look, the last thing you want to do is head down to immigration and stand in line for 3 hours just to clarify something they screwed up. Oh, and if your Spanish sucks, then you're really SOL, aren't you? All right, speaking of gringos whose Spanish really sucks, you know, I got to tell you, I'm off the gringo tourist trail almost 100% of the time. And the other day, I walked into a really nice residential tower just to check it out because there was a sign outside that said there were a couple of units for rent and for sale. You know, there's a big real estate bubble about to pop in most Latin cities and towns. And some of the more astute owners and developers are suddenly starting to realize that. Many of them are panicking. Anyway, I walked into this really nice lobby in a residential tower of around 8 stories high. It was a 32-unit place, 4 on each floor. And I asked the guy at the front desk how many units were available for rent and how many for sale. And he said, I think 3. Though he was stretching the truth, actually lying in a big way, because there were something like 14 units available. And crazy enough, and this can only happen in Latin America, phase two was going up right next door. It was around half done, no windows in it yet, but it was its full 8 stories. And there was a big sign saying there was a pre-construction offer. You know, they always give you a deal if you buy before they're actually done. And they were saying 15 to 20% discount if you buy in before the building's finished. And I know you could probably get 20 or 30% out of them easy. So anyway, they got the second phase going up. The first phase is more than 2 years old, and they still haven't sold that one out yet. Yep, another classic sign of a bubble in progress. So anyway, I'm off the Gringo Tourist Trail in a really nice, high-end residential area in a very big Latin city. So I checked out one of these units, and you won't believe this. Each one is equipped with a water purification unit, reverse osmosis, and a final UV light treatment. And that kind of system really is the best of the best. But there's a lot that can go wrong, and I know within a year, all those systems are going to be kaput, or most of them anyway. Because for one thing, even educated Latins, when they look under the counter and see a system like that, 3 big canisters and a blue UV light peeking out of the darkness, they have no idea what that is. So how are you going to get them to change the filters every 6 months to a year, whatever? And even if they took a shot at it, where would they get the filters to match the unit? Duh. So anyway, I appreciated the fact that this building had everything. A fantastic gym, tremendous internet, an 8th floor rooftop terrace with ocean views to kill for. Not to mention you had your choice of granite, real granite, and marble countertops throughout. And the floors, very high quality tile. Though as usual, the kitchen cabinets looked nice, but they were made out of that crummy composite board stuff. And I told the guy taking me through, I'd rip that stuff out right away, or I wouldn't have it installed in the first place. I'd get real solid wood. Because, you know, when you buy cheap cabinets and furniture, they just have a kind of a laminated coating on press board. It's pure cheap-ass crap out of China that you see in all department stores these days. And you know what happens to it if you slam into it with a vacuum cleaner, or when you're moving beds or furniture around, man, you'll scratch and dent it up fast, and you might even bust off a piece of the corner. You know what I'm talking about. So anyway, I'm looking at a really nice 2-bedroom, 2.5-bath place. Would you believe $140,000? And you probably could get them down to $110,000. But I digress here. What I really wanted to talk about was when I walked into the lobby and started BSing with the guy at the desk. The first thing he said to me is, man, where are you from? Your Spanish is really good. And I answered as I usually answer. I say, take a guess. And he insulted the hell out of me and said, Mexico. I said, oh man, that hurts. So anyway, he's stationed in the lobby behind the row of computer screens and surveillance cameras. Oh, and I forgot to tell you, the doors were solid wood, but the cabinets, crap. But they had some of the best locks, handles, and hardware on the doors and such that I've ever seen here in Latin America. And the so-called grifería, that would be, you know, the plumbing fixtures, first class all the way. Oh, and there's underground parking too, and your own remote for the electric door to get in. Oh, and cooler yet, there's an elevator in the parking lot. In order to get in the elevator, you have to swipe it with your own key card, which means delivery guys and such can't go into the parking lot and get into the elevator and just kind of roam around the building. You see that a lot here in Latin America, but not in this place. Anyway, I got to talking to the guy in the lobby at the front desk, and he said something like, I don't see many gringos, but you're the first one I've seen that actually speaks decent Spanish. And then he said, the stereotype about gringos is that they're so smart, they created the world as we know it, they're inventive, they are rich, highly educated and such, but why, when they got all that going for them, can't they learn their Spanish? And he said that's why they're easy marks for lawyers, real estate people, cops, and car dealers. Well, I guess that says it all, huh? Which brings me directly to this email. This is from another Johnny. He says, Johnny, I'm still playing catch-up with your shows and podcasts. I'm about a month behind and probably only missed 10 to 20% of your total output since day one. And thankfully, he says, I have to pat myself on the back because I've become less, much less of a Facebook addict. And I don't even use my real name when I sign up for things. But I'm more of a YouTube addict these days. And he says, Johnny, I have to tell you, your YouTube podcasts are so well done. And he puts a lot of O's after the so. I look forward to you catching up someday on some newer ones, as the imagery is always so excellent. All right, me, the other Johnny here. You know, I get a lot of emails from people saying, when are you going to add more YouTubes? I have about 150 of them up there, and we're way behind. But me and my YouTube lady have actually had a little powwow this last week talking about putting together some more of them. So there'll be more a-coming. The thing is, you just can't whip one out in 5 minutes. They take some time. So we'll let you know as soon as they're posted. Anyway, the other Johnny says in this email, the point of this hopefully brief email is that I subscribe to various French and Spanish language channels on YouTube. I try to limit my total YouTube and Facebook activity to no more than 2 hours a day, even though I subscribe to more than 100 channels. As for me, I'm a dual citizen born in France with an expired French passport. Now, I'm a bit rusty, but I'm still capable of fluent speech in French. So I decided to take both languages, French and Spanish. So I'm boning up on French to properly impress the French consulate employees when I start to renew my new passport, and using the foundation of that language to learn Spanish. And to do that, I subscribe to English, French, and Spanish versions of France, Channel 24, and RT. And I just started subscribing to Telesur, which is all in Spanish. Now, some of the time, but unpredictably, these channels will have proper Spanish subtitles if you're watching the Spanish language version, which is pretty cool, really. As we know, and you've mentioned in your past shows, most movies, DVDs, etc., have subtitles in Spanish, but they're quite different from the actual dialogue that's going on, and that really sucks if you're trying to learn the language. I mean, how would you know if the translations are bad if your Spanish isn't good enough to tell the difference? It's a catch-22. Anyway, the best of them seems to be Telesur, T-E-L-E-S-U-R. All right, it's the other Johnny here. Did you know that Telesur is from Venezuela? Hugo Chavez inaugurated it as the socialist answer to CNN. I'll talk about that some other time, but let's get on with this email. So anyway, he says Telesur, as far as the Spanish translations, is the best of them. And on those rare occasions that the other channels have Spanish subtitles, they're pretty close too. You might want to discuss this on your show if you haven't already. And if you have any other channels to suggest, or if your listeners do, I'd love to hear about it. By the way, I used to be a Marxist back in the college days. Seems to be a thing when you're in college. But today, I'm more a Jesse Ventura / Gary Null kind of guy, in terms of being able to recognize the fake left / right division that benefits the scumbags that are on top of the pyramid. So I'd like to hear more about neutral or even conservative leaning equivalents to Telesur, if they exist, that cover the overall news in Central and South America, if you know of any. This is the other John signing off. Well, you know, it's a funny thing. A lot of gringos and expats who've been down here a while swear they learned their Spanish, or at least polished it to a decent degree, by watching those Mexican telenovelas. And I say Mexican because they're syndicated all through Latin America. That's kind of like the Hollywood or Bollywood of telenovelas in Latin America. So I'd say at least 95% of all of them come out of studios in Mexico City. And funny thing, just yesterday, I was with a very good-looking Latina woman, and we were talking about her favorite places in Latin America. Actually, her least favorite, Mexico. And she said that's pretty much the consensus of all her friends and acquaintances in other Latin countries. Oh, they love the telenovelas, all right. That's about it. But otherwise, I think it's just a narco-infested country, and they've all heard stories of other Latins south of the Mexican border. The poor ones making their way through Mexico to go to the States, they see on the news and they've heard about those disappearances and rapes, so they're afraid to go to Mexico. Which is why, she said, you'll never see middle-class Latinas, that's middle-class Latin style, or above, ever try to sneak into the United States through Mexico. No way. But still, there's always a steady stream of poor, uneducated Latinos sneaking through Mexico to try to get into the States. Those that, back in their home country, have nothing to lose and therefore nothing really to offer the U.S. once they get there. Then you've got those people who say they're doing the jobs Americans won't do, like pulling weeds, gardening, and leaf blowing. To which my comeback is, who do you think did the leaf blowing before the Mexicans got here? Why, I did, and a million other adolescent and high school and college kids like me. In fact, I had about 10 yards I'd cut the grass and do the leaf blowing for. But I digress as usual. Anyway, if you talk to gringos and expats who've been in Latin America a while and have a pretty decent command of the Spanish language, I'd say at least 95% of those learned it due to the fact that either they had a Latino or Latina other half. Like I said in last week's show, media naranja, the other half of the orange, which is how Latinos put it. And or they've spent a lot of time watching Latin soap operas, telenovelas. In fact, one cool guy that came down to one of my expat insider seminars and ended up living down here now, That guy really knows his Spanish. And how'd he learn it? Well, from the telenovelas. In fact, he got addicted to them, he said. He knows all the characters, all the hot women, all the narco guys, all the cheaters, liars, two-timers, and everything else going on in those soap operas. In fact, if you sit down with him and broach the subject of telenovelas, man, he knows all the plot lines, too. In fact, he's as addicted to some of these telenovelas as some people are to the Game of Thrones. Oh, and by the way, those telenovelas might run 5, 10, 15 chapters in a series. And unlike, for example, your typical American popular TV series like Walking Dead, Breaking Bad, or The Game of Thrones, the Latin telenovelas are repeated a couple of times a week. So if you don't catch this week's chapter first time around, day or two, they'll show it again and they'll show it again. So if you do get hooked on them, not to worry. Oh, and by the way, if you do get hooked on them, you'll find suddenly you and your cleaning lady are going to have a hell of a lot to talk about. And you'll get a great insight as to how the writers of these programs project the U.S. to the rest of the Latin folks south of the border. You know, streets paved with gold, everybody's got a Range Rover. The streets, restaurants, bars, and businesses filled with beautiful people who have closets full of designer clothes. And they seem to play and play hard 24/7 and don't necessarily have a real job. But then again, that's the usual plot line of American soap operas too, right? All right, now it's time to throw a few things out there for our emailer last week, David, who gave us some great insight on what it's like to be a blind person in Latin America. And he mentioned that now that he's over 65, he has very few options with medical insurance, whether it be in the U.S. or Latin America. And for now, he's kind of stuck in Buenos Aires, Argentina, where his wife, an Argentino, is on the state-run medical plan. As he said, because she's an Argentino, she managed to hold on to her insurance in Argentina, and they came back down from the States because it just was getting impossibly expensive up north for their meds and such. And he said between him and his wife, they're making around $35,000 a year, which is upper middle class here in Latin America. And here's what I suggest. Screw Argentina. It's a lost cause. It's going down. They've got 25% inflation or more. On top of that, you said you were paying more than 40,000 pesos a month. That's more than a third of your income just for healthcare. And I'll tell you, if you're just shopping around for good, low-cost healthcare insurance, and that's all you really care about, that's your number one priority, there are many Latin countries that let you buy into their public healthcare system. Most of those systems are crap, of course, but some are halfway decent. But, for example, Colombia will let you buy in very cheaply, probably, I guess in his case, between $200 and $300 a month. You see, the thing is, there's a law in Colombia that says you have a human right to have health insurance. And Colombia actually has one of the very few fairly good public health care plans. And they have a lot of very good and extremely cheap private health insurance plans, too. That said, I'm going to send Senor Dave some information on that. Now, you've heard me talk many times about Latin countries whose big two or three banks run insurance programs, too. And in order to get on those plans, you only have to get an account at one of those banks. However, in most of these cases, to get insurance, you're going to need to have residency status. So you'll have to apply for temporary or permanent residency in that country and then get on the healthcare plan. For example, let's take Panama, Guatemala, or Colombia. If you make an appointment with an insurance broker, he can come up with 10 different plans, private plans, that are all pretty damn good and very cheap. In fact, I've seen some monster plans that cover everything for around $400 a month. We're talking zero deductible here. And the average gringo or expat does not need a plan like that. Usually you can get by between $100 and $200 a month and have a more than adequate plan with a tiny little deductible. I'm talking about maybe $50, $100 as opposed to many plans in the States where the yearly deductibles start at $5,000. But the thing is, for example, if you go to an insurance broker in Guatemala, Panama, Colombia, whatever, and he prints up 5 or 10 plans to choose from, as soon as you tell him you're not a resident, that will narrow your options down to maybe 2. Oh, and David, in your email, you asked me if I could pick 10 Latin cities that would be good for you to check out or live in. Well, you know what? It ain't that easy. But if you said, give me the 10 cities where you could get good insurance plans, that would be easy. But you have to have a lot of other things on your wish list, not just insurance. In fact, that would be like asking someone in the States to come up with the 10 best cities to live in. Well, you know what? If you ask a bunch of people that question, you'll get a bunch of different answers. Because every Latin city has the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great. And it really is all about boots on the ground. And it's true, once you hit 65, a lot of plans won't cover you anymore. But there are a good number of plans that'll sign you up for a policy, but they'll just cut down your lifetime maximum. So, for example, if you got a $200,000 lifetime maximum, when you hit 65, they might knock it down to $100,000. Now, that kind of coverage sounds like peanuts, right? But remember, in Latin America, especially off the Gringo Tourist Trail, a $200,000 lifetime limit is equal to around $1 million to $1.5 million in the States, because costs here are a fifth to a sixth of what you're used to paying. Oh, and another thing about the medications. It's true you can find practically all the medications they have up in the States here at the bigger local pharmacies. And most all good insurance plans will cover that stuff. However, if you're taking a proprietary drug and not a generic, that will eat into your lifetime maximum really fast. So hopefully the medications that you're on or will be on have a generic substitute. If not, you'll find out the proprietary brand name drug costs about the same as it does up in the States. So if it's $300 for 20 pills, that's what you'll have to pay. And if your insurance company will pay 80%, great. But remember, down here you have small lifetime maximums because the cost of medical care is so cheap. Of course, you could buy a policy with a very high lifetime maximum too. For example, $1 million or $2 million US, like they have up in the States. But now you're talking about paying $400, $500, or $600 a month for that. And though it'd be nuts for the average gringo expat with not too many healthcare issues to buy a policy like that, why would they? But for you, Dave, it might serve you well. Because from what you're telling me you're paying in Argentina, $500 or $600 a month would be a steal. So again, if you're strictly looking for the best deal in medical healthcare costs in whatever Latin country, you're going to have to get with an insurance broker one-on-one and give them a couple of days to come up with some options. Oh, and by the way, since you and your wife are blind, Dave, and you're making $35,000 a year, first thing I would do is to hire a full-time live-in LPN or RN. Of course, she'll double as your cook and cleaning lady, too. This is Latin America, you know. And she will be more or less your seeing eye dog. She'll take you everywhere, shopping, the beach, church, karaoke, bingo, whatever. Oh, and you know what, Dave? That'll set you back around $4,000 to $6,000 a year. And really, that's the best insurance policy you could ever ask for. Yep, I'm talking about a live-in, RN, or LPN for $4,000 to $6,000 a year. And I'd say double that if you're on the Gringo Tourist Trail. But just imagine having your own live-in RN or LPN for 10% of what you'd pay up in the States. In Cleveland, an impossible dream. But since it's totally possible and achievable here in Latin America, if you're handicapped in any way at all, that's my suggestion. Get a full-time live-in something or another, whether it's a cleaning lady, LPN, RN. And I'll tell you, if you hire an RN, man, she'll be able to suss out those insurance programs for you and anything in the healthcare field because she'll be connected.
You've been listening to the Expat Files Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy.